Thank you very much, Veronica Carter, Steve Bertrand, not Kim Gordon. I apologize for that. I spent the whole morning sitting beside you, and then I introduced Kim Gordon.
I even brought you banana bread.
Blueberry banana bread. Veronica Carter in the newsroom today. Steve Bertrand here. It's Friday, and it is time for the Wintrust Business Lunch. Tom Gimbel will stop by. He's the CEO of the LaSalle Network. We'll talk to him about a little bit about communicating in the workplace, you know, and hard skills versus soft skills, and what you need to do to bring yourself into some forms of improvement when you're at work. Scott Kleinberg, as I said, will be along a little bit later. And then I want to look at the Sunday. It's a little out of form, but I'm a big fan of the Irish American Heritage Center, and Ireland tourism is absolutely booming this year, and one of the reasons is it's the centennial of the Easter Rising, and the Irish American Heritage Center is marking that this weekend. So we'll kick that around a little later in the program, but we start on Fridays with Andrea Haynes, the editor of the Blue Sky Innovation in Chicago Tribune. Andrea, welcome.
Thanks, Steve.
Now, yesterday was that big Chicago Venture Summit when all the fat cats with their cash come into town, and a couple hundred companies get to show off and try to get some funding. How did we do?
Yes, so the event went great. According to our reporter, Amina Alahi, who spent the day there talking to people, she talked to a number of the venture capitalists who had come into Chicago. And, you know, they reacted really positively to it. They kind of know already that Chicago has a startup scene that's kind of happening. But, you know, they're there to network and really, I think, had a great day.
Is it like Sundance, where people literally come, they see a film, and then they offer the rights to it? Or is this more of a cocktail party sort of get acquainted
thing? Yeah, it's a little, I would say it's a little more one step removed. It's not like there are startups necessarily pitching on the spot and getting money on the spot. They do have some short pitches just to, you know, acquaint people with some of the types of companies that we have, but there's not actually investing happening on the spot. It's more of an exposure, networking.
Right, and sort of just to put Chicago on the map in a way, right?
Put Chicago on the map, and I think Chicago is on the map, but some of these, you know, some of the VCs said that they view this almost as a regional thing now, where they're, you know, they're looking for other investors to perhaps partner with on investments. It, you know, they were really expressing that it was a really great regional networking opportunity for them as well.
So for them to find maybe other VCs to go in on things with.
Exactly, and just get to know people on the ground in Chicago and in some of the other Midwest cities that they're interested in.
I wish I'd known. I'm always willing to invest in new and exciting things. Yeah, I've got $62 in my bank account.
I'm sure they would have welcomed you and your $62.
I would have taken a share. Hey, it's Earth. Is it? What is it? Earth Day today?
Earth Day.
And so you guys at Blue Sky Innovation have put together a gallery of Earth Day friendly gadgets, right? For the Gen Xers or for the millennials, or what are we looking at?
We did. So we have a hipster gadget guide
that
we do occasionally.
Yeah.
Yes, for the hipsters. You know, some of the products, as you note, are serious. Some are perhaps a little tongue-in-cheek.
But they're all, are they all real?
They're real products.
Right,
they are real products that you can buy. Like, whether you view them as perhaps gag products or real products is up to you.
Well, I'm looking at them, and I'm thinking, I got three or four of them. One is this tie skinnier, right? So you got an old fat tie, and it will make it thinner, make you a little hipper.
Yep.
Another is a beard comb made out of recycled vinyl records.
I mean, you know, that's one that you have to say is on the cusp between reality and parody, maybe.
That's when I started to wonder if I was being had, but no. So they're all real articles, real things. Okay, check that out. It's at Blue Sky Innovation, and there's a number of them. I want to save some time, though, to talk about this great piece at Blue Sky about cybersecurity and USB plugs. What do you call them? USB drives.
USB drives.
And
yeah,
you know, and around the radio station, they're sitting around everywhere. You see them, and the idea is that criminals now are using these USB drives to get information from people's computers. Well, I mean, if you walk by and you see a USB drive on the sidewalk or something, it's kind of enticing, right, to put it in your computer and figure out what's on it.
Yeah, people have expressed a few different reasons they would do that. One, of course, is pure curiosity. You never know what treasures you might find on a random USB drive. So curiosity drives it. Some people say they are looking for identifying information that they might want to return it to somebody. You know, they
right.
can be a little pricey. Maybe somebody needs what's on there or whatever the reason.
And that's like taking the cash out of the wallet because you want to find out who it belongs to.
I guess,
to.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we were surprised to see that, you know, half of people would actually plug that thing into their computer. And, of course, that can lead to problems for you if you do that.
So there were real studies where a couple of schools, a couple of places, in fact, there's a security company that does it, and they would just sort of one security company outside an office that they provide security for sort of would just drop some of these USB ports or drives in the parking lot and places like that. And then they can track them. They can see what happens. And well over half of them get plugged into a computer somewhere.
Yep.
And the idea is when you do that, you are giving up a lot of your control over what's on the computer, right? I mean, that's the way the bad guys are operating now.
Yeah, unleashing kind of malware on your computer. We've been covering a lot of cybersecurity issues this month, and some of them are, you know, huge, big, important, and like we all think we know not to click on links or we're smart enough not to do this or that.
Right.
And this was an example of something where we thought, wow, like once you are aware that this is a bad idea, you realize it, but a lot of people are just mindlessly kind of plugging those in and not realizing what can happen.
So if you see a USB drive in your parking lot, you should drive over it.
Yeah, especially if it has an enticing label on it.
All right, so one more thing.
Don't be tempted.
Very quickly, this new Click for Friends or this app for friends, right? A lot of people are used to hooking up with apps, and this is the new one where you find actual friends or groups of friends?
Yeah, so this is idea being to target more like groups of friends and immediate activities. Like, I want to go do this right now. Who can go do this with me? I want to meet some new people. Not so much into one-on-one chatting or one-on-one connections, but it pushes you into group chats, and then it pushes you into actually going to do something.
And it's to get in it, you have to know someone in the group, or it's like the Moose Lodge or something like that?
Yes, exactly. You get connected to one, and then you're part of the group. It's called Click.
It's called Click, and it's a sort of a new way to meet people. You can read more about it at ChicagoTribune.com, Blue Sky Innovation. Andrea Haynes, thanks for coming in. You do whatever you want, but maybe next week you'll give me a beard comb. I have a little week
on it.
Made out of vinyl. All right, we'll see you again next week.
Thanks, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It is a Friday afternoon, and this is the Friday we'll have to suffer through in order to have a really nice weekend. Tom Gimbel is here, the CEO of the LaSalle Network. Stops by most Fridays.
Good to see you.
Describe your business, because we never do that.
We are a staffing and recruiting firm helping people from college graduates up through executives in the disciplines of accounting and finance, technology, administrative, marketing, and human resources.
And so we'd like to talk about, and there's a nice new website from a couple weeks ago, too.
Thank you.
So people should check that out. But we like to talk about, sort of, I guess I would describe it as attributes in the workplace or culture in the workplace, right?
Yeah.
Ways to get in advance or to get along to further the business. And today we're going to talk about soft skills versus hard skills. And when I hear that, I think of them as almost unteachables. Are they unteachables?
No, I don't necessarily think they are. I think what most people lose track of is they haven't been talked to about their interpersonal skills. People don't look at people and say, you're being a jerk, right? You might say that to your friend. You don't say that in the workplace.
Sadly, you might say that about the person as soon as they leave the room.
Right? Exactly right.
Which only reinforces it.
And so if you have real, I always say, you know, friends are terrible people to talk to about job problems, right? Because you say, oh, my boss made me come in on Saturday. And the friend goes, what a jerk.
Right?
They never say, did you not get anything done during the week? Are you delayed? Are you going to get promoted? What did they tell you? And soft skills are the attitudes that you want. Now, certain places, 40-hour work week, they don't want people to do more, punch a clock. That's fine. You can be whatever you want. Other places and other people want to get promoted. They like what they do. They're passionate. They want to do more of it. You got to find out the right place for you, and that's where soft skills come in.
So a soft skill is communication?
Yeah, it's communication. It's also, I think, you know, the big hot button the past few years has been EQ over IQ, the emotional intelligence.
Right.
Right.
We've brought this up.
We have.
You are a little bit of an eye roller on that.
Oh, I try never to eye roll, but I think I think it's valid to an extent. I think there's only so much you can tell. EQ is what I like to call it more that is more important is self-perspective. Do you know how people view you?
Right.
Right? It's the person who wears the fish tie. Do they know how people are looking at them? And that's an important. If you're wearing a suit from 1978, do you know how people are viewing you?
Well, okay, it's because I tend to think that people are who they are, and that's the package you're going to get when you hire them. More and more when we talk, you don't view that, I don't think. I mean,
no.
You sort of believe in this ability to transform.
I do. I think it's a lot like life. You know, I always say to my friends, I'm 43 years old. What would the 20-year-old you think of the 43-year-old you? Right. And because we change, right? We have we're striving to find our man cave, literally and figuratively, right? But our wives or girlfriends won't let us do that. We change. We become people that like flowered couches in our houses, right? Because we care about something. It's the same thing in the workplace. You become a little bit more touchy-feely. You become caring about people who work with you and for you. But you have to have leadership that points that out. And those are the things that take your career as a leader, as a manager, as a doer to a new level.
You have to have skill as a manager to call the guy in and say, hey, you're wearing that fish tie way too often.
Absolutely. And it's hard. And also not be afraid of the results. Whenever we do coaching with clients or when we actually have to reprimand staff, we look at people and say, you can take this one of two ways. Either get demoralized by it and think that we're picking on you, or view it as they're actually sharing this with me because they want me to grow and be
right.
better.
Do classes, do courses, can you do things like that?
Yeah, there's
that?
Some of it. I still think one of the best ones is the Dale Carnegie, right? And How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's a book, but they have a whole organization built on it. And you can learn how to get people to like you.
Seven Secrets to a Successful...
That book was so long for me. I'm a state college guy, Steve. I couldn't get to the first couple pages. But the Carnegie stuff works.
All right. Well, Tom Gimbel is the CEO of the LaSalle Network. And you got a big weekend plan?
I'm going to try and get to the Hawks game tomorrow night.
Good for you.
I'm
yeah.
a good band.
You just flew in
guy.
From St. Louis, I know.
Yeah, I wish. Well, it was Cincinnati. Cincinnati was the no-hitter, right? So
right.
I wish. But I'm still trying to get over in your promo. Viennese is what people are called from Vienna?
The Viennese.
That is like Chicagoans to Chicago?
You should come, yeah.
I honest to God, I never would have known that.
The Viennese, like Viennese coffee?
Now that you say it. But if you would have asked me what they are, I never would have.
You should have come. You come with me to Vienna this
When's
summer.
The trip?
July 30th we leave. No, June 30th.
Huh.
I am not a detail guy today. It's clearly Friday. All right, Gimbel, good
on.
To see you. We'll see you again next week.
Yep.
This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start spreading the news.
Here it is. It's the farewell.
I'm leaving today.
Scott Kleinberg from the Chicago Tribune is here.
Part of it, New York, New York.
For the last time, because Scott is moving on and he's going to work for the mayor of New York, the New York City mayor, Bill de Blasio.
Yep.
Because Rahm wouldn't hire him. but you're going to be in charge of social media, right?
I am.
For
yes.
the mayor, not the city, but the
mayor
mayor's,
the mayor's office. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So when the mayor tweets something, chances are you're going to have written it.
Chances are, yes, somebody, me or somebody on my
does
team.
Does he do that? Does he ever tweet himself? Do you know?
I don't know that for sure, but I know that he wants to have more of a digital voice. So,
it's a fascinating job. And, you know, it's one of those jobs where you can only get in trouble.
That's so true.
I mean, there's so many times when someone tweets something out and it explodes.
Yeah.
And so we all have to weigh everything we do on social media, but you're going to have to do it for a couple of reasons. One, for it. And two, because you're putting your words in someone else's mouth.
Exactly. But the one thing that has helped me in doing this job for as long as I have is you know how to deal with those crises and you know what to do when something goes wrong and you know how to shape something where hopefully it doesn't go wrong.
Right. So something could go wrong in the middle of the night. In New York City.
Could certainly happen,
and
yes.
People are going to look to, I guess, you know, by and large, they look to the fire department, the police department, and
right.
different agencies, not the mayor himself.
Right, right.
But it is the sort of job that you might have to be available 24/7.
Most definitely. And you know what? That's not too much different than it is now, because if some amazing breaking news story happens at 3 in the morning here, the same thing would apply, and
right.
I'd be here too.
You know in It's a Wonderful Life in the movie, right?
Oh, love
and
that movie, yeah.
When Clarence, an angel gets its wings
oh,
and a bell,
yes.
right?
Yep.
So here's what the little signal, when I want you to let me know when you're there and everything's okay.
Okay.
Is when Bill de Blasio follows me on Twitter. Okay?
I will see what I can do.
All right, so I want the mayor of New York to be following me on Twitter.
I will see what I can do.
I'll give you 10 days.
I will tell him what a great guy you are.
Do that. And you don't have to. You've got the power. You can do it
That's
on your
what
own.
I do.
Well, look, I have enjoyed having you in here so much. And
thank you so much.
You really have really brought a lot to the show in an entertaining way, but in an informative way, too. I think that a lot of what you bring in are the things that a lot of us care about, you know, the casual sort of users.
Right, right.
And
thank you.
So you're irreplaceable. Pretty much we're canceling the program.
Well, I just want to say I appreciate that very much, and this is – the two times a week that I do this, the highlights of my week, and I really enjoy it.
Well, you can still do it. Just call under an assumed name or something. We'll have you on from New York. One of the things I tease that we talk about is this new scam to keep up with the idea that your Apple password is expiring, and that's something people should be aware of.
They should definitely be aware. It's a text message that's coming across on iPhone saying that your Apple ID, which is what you use to sign into your iCloud and your iTunes, is expiring. The thing is, people are so quick to click on these things, even in 2016.
If it looks like, I know, but you know, if you're doing 50 things and you're in a Windows program and it looks like it's Windows.
Yep. Totally. And some of these look real. This one looks a little less real than some of the other ones that I've seen, but not so fake where you would say, oh, I'm not going to click on this. There are reports of people clicking on it. Most of it seems to be happening in the UK from what I've heard, but there are some that have happened in the United States.
And the key, right, is to be mindful when they start asking you for information.
Absolutely. Apple and most large companies will never ask you for anything to do with your password or username over a communication, over a text, over an email, anything like that. So the chances of that actually happening are very, very slim.
You know, I've had trouble with my, I was trying to upgrade on my Mac, and it was rejecting my Apple password. But it would work then for, like, to buy an app on the phone. I didn't have an issue. I wouldn't have more than one Apple password.
No,
right?
That's the beauty of the Apple ID. It carries over to everything. So it could have been just a glitch or something like that. Because if it's working on one and not the other, it's nothing wrong actually with your password. It's probably something just wrong with the sign-in system on that one part that you're using.
I was talking to Bill and Wendy earlier, and I just started laughing when I said it out loud. But I know it's where we're heading. Elon Musk says that he is seeing driverless buses as a way to get people around, and I'm just, you know, I'm stepping off the curb at State and Madison and getting whacked by, I get whacked, you know, people get hit by the CTA buses with drivers in them.
When you see those mirrors coming at you, it's like,
mirrors,
crazy.
Right,
I know, it's really scary.
Well, they wouldn't have the mirrors with the driverless buses. So
I guess that's true. You wouldn't need the mirror. That's very, very true. And it's weird what he's calling these things. He says they're not quite buses. He says they're autonomous vehicles that are like buses. But then when he talked about it, he said he's already said too much. He doesn't want to say anymore.
Right.
So he's obviously got a lot of things in the pipeline. He's working on that Hyperloop thing out west to go from, L.A. to San Francisco in 45 minutes.
Is that still going on?
Yeah, it's in testing, apparently, in the desert in Nevada or something. So, I mean, that's happening.
The idea with the driverless bus, he says, it would decrease congestion. And
yes.
What I'm thinking, well, this is a light rail or even a cable car.
It could very well be a light rail. I mean, that makes perfect sense.
But it wouldn't be new, and it wouldn't be autonomous.
Well, I mean, he wants it to be autonomous. I mean, maybe he's talking about, you know, they have, like, those magnetic systems that, like, kind of hover. Maybe he's talking about something like that. He never says how long something will take. That's the one thing about him. He doesn't think in terms of time. So, you know, this could be 50 years down the road for all we know, but just the fact, I think, in his mind that the idea has been seeded is important.
So is he an innovator or is he a futurist?
I think he's both, but I think he's a true futurist that is not afraid to say anything that he's thinking, because most people think that his ideas are crazy, but the first time one of these ideas comes to light, it's going to be like, wow, this guy can do anything.
The idea of futurists is intriguing to me because
it absolutely is.
I'm not a science fiction guy, and I tend to think of them as science fiction in many ways.
Right.
But a futurist can really see what's coming, and Elon Musk has done that a couple of times now.
He has, yeah.
Okay, so the FBI really wanted to get into that iPhone
The
San Bernardino shooter. We followed that closely, and they ended up saying they got into it in another way without the help from Apple.
Yep.
And the price tag for that was?
It was over $1 million, according to the FBI director. Yes.
And the benefit that we got out of it?
Apparently nothing. Apparently no new information that came out of it. And the thing that shocks me about it is, after all it was said and done, the FBI director said it was still worth it.
Well, and maybe it is if they figured out how to do it the next time.
Maybe it is, but the problem with that, and while that's very, very wise, the problem with that is I'm sure the minute that Apple heard that FBI was successful in getting into this phone, they were working on a way to make sure that was, you know, taken care of.
And there's value in the fact that they found out there weren't ties or they didn't get information.
And I'm sure that's the case, too. I mean, and it's also possible that there was information that they're not sharing with us. I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, possibilities.
Right.
There, but
yeah. And $1 million, what's that? Huh?
Oh, it's nothing to stay.
Right. I mean, you know, you'll find out when you're spending money in New York City.
Exactly.
Public
right.
money left and right. you know, we should talk a little bit about the death of Prince, because I mean, everyone has, and we don't need to rehash what's been said.
Right.
But this is the sort of event that's made for social media, right?
Yeah, and it's amazing. You know, we think about big things like this happening, and we think about other things that had they happened when social media was around, what would things be like? You know, this was just such an instant outpouring. You know, Prince is just one of those people that everyone knows, everyone has some sort of memory of, you know, and all the social networks got involved quickly. There was Google with its Google Doodle, which was purple and had raindrops. Snapchat had a filter that was purple. You know, everybody did things that were, you know, not overboard, you know, just nice and thoughtful. And even today,
people are
just talking about it and they're still sharing those things. And it's just amazing to watch.
Scott Kleinberg, thank you very much for being part of this program.
Thank you.
Were from the beginning with me, and I certainly appreciate it. I just wish you the best of luck.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you for making me a part of your show.
You bet. And if something terribly does go wrong with de Blasio's Twitter campaign, I'm going to be telling people, I know who did that. I know the guy.
Great to know.
So I look forward to the mayor following me. I'll keep everyone updated on that. Be well. Have a great time. Enjoy yourself.
Thank you so much, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Orion. Steve Bertrand here, 1252, and wonderful music sounds of Ireland. This is a little out of the character for The Business Lunch, but who cares? I'm a big fan of the Irish American Heritage Center, and I talk a lot about tourism on the program. And Ireland, tourism in Ireland is actually up 20% this year. And I think there are a couple of reasons for it. I think one, you know, people are a little concerned about flying to the continent, frankly, and I don't think there's reason for that, but maybe that's part of it. But the other is, this is the centennial of the Easter Rising, and that's going to be celebrated at the Irish American Heritage Center this weekend. On Sunday, there's a big concert. Cliff Carlson and Bob McNamara are in the studio. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right, so Cliff, let's start with Cliff. You and I know each other through IBAM, right? The Celebration of the Arts at the Irish American Heritage Center.
Yes.
And you were in Ireland for... Tell me, just explain for people what the Easter Rising is.
In 1916, on April 24th, civilians in Ireland stood up against rule by Britain and created their own republic. And at 1204... 100 years ago, on the 24th, they, on the steps of the GPO, they read the proclamation of their freedom.
It's the 24th, so it is the celebration Sunday is the actual 100th anniversary.
It's the actual 100th anniversary, almost to the hour.
Now, everything was going well until they read the declaration, right? It didn't work out so well.
Actually, it went well for a few days. They lasted a week. They had about 15,000 total people willing to fight. And, you know, Britain way outnumbered them.
Right.
They did last a week. And so when it ended in a week and they surrendered, Britain made the mistake of executing one at a time many of the leaders. And each one they executed made the people madder. And that's what actually led to Ireland becoming a free nation, Republic of Ireland in the south, the 26 counties.
Not to oversimplify it, because and it's worse because people lost their lives, but it's legendary in the way that the Boston Tea Party is maybe here in the States. It planted the seed and fueled the fire.
It did. It planted the seed, and it was poets and writers and artists and things that actually stood up and fought.
Right.
Against Britain.
I think it's a lot of people go to Ireland, they don't realize the animosity that is still there a little bit between England and Ireland.
It's not too bad. It's the people know it's the government, not the people. So it's a very friendly place. It's one of the best places I've ever visited. And by the way, Ireland is a great business partner with America. So,
yeah.
You know, it kind of fits today.
Well, good. We'll take that. And so there's a celebration on Sunday.
Correct.
You're going to read the proclamation.
We'll read the proclamation on the steps at 1204. At 1230, we're going to show a film called The Birth of a Nation. At 1:30, we have actors who are going to read actual letters from 1916. At 2:30, we're going to have celebrate the women of Ireland who over 200 women fought that weekend for freedom in Ireland, and we're going to celebrate them with poetry and song. Kathy Cowan's doing that. And then at 3:30, We're going to have a panel about the men of 1960.
And then a little bit later, there's a concert, right? That's where McNamara comes in?
At 4:30, we're going to have a concert celebrating the great rebel songs, and Bob can tell you more about that.
Bob McNamara from the Chancey Brothers in the studio. So you're celebrating the rebel. Well, just sing us a song right now. No, I'm just kidding you.
We don't have enough time.
Tell me about the concert.
So the concert is a celebration not only of just 1916, but the longer struggle for Irish freedom. And it's going to be celebrated, obviously, through song. And it's a coming together of a lot of the local Irish talent in the community.
Yeah, the names I've read, it's a pretty impressive list.
Yeah, so there are over 24 performers. So not only my group, the Chancey Brothers, but the Sullivan Brothers, the Dooley Brothers, lots of brothers, Larkin and Moran Brothers, but Jimmy Keane, Jimmy Moore, Catherine O'Connell, Catherine Cowan, Eamon McDonough, Jeff Ward, and Josephine Craven are all on the docket. So it's really a community of musicians coming together, but to sing the songs that people have heard for at least not the last 100 years, but even longer, some of the older songs.
I like it because it's a chance to learn. I mean, we tend to think we know the stories or know things, and there's so much to learn about the history of the Republic of Ireland and how it got its freedom and where it is today. How do people find out more information, Ken?
They can go to www.irish-american.org, or they can go to irishamericannews.com.
Great. I'll put a link up on my Facebook as well.